Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Going to be reading this morning from Canto 3, Chapter 8, Texts 7, 8, and 9. And the heading of the chapter, the title, is Manifestation of Brahma from Vishnu. This is at the very beginning of the chapter. So Brahma hasn't appeared yet. But the description of Brahma's appearance is being presented by Maitreya to Vidura. So, this is well into the discussion between Maitreya and Vidura. Maitreya pretty intense. Sound like a plane taking off. It's okay. Maitreya, we're going to hear some in these set of verses, but like Vidura, Maitreya was already well qualified. But in addition to the previous qualification, he has just heard firsthand Uddhava Gita. He just heard Krishna speaking to Uddhava directly. And for that to happen, it wasn't an accident. It was a providential arrangement because of his great qualification. And for the additional service that Krishna had for Maitreya to perform. One of those was his speaking to Vidura. And Maitreya's speaking to Vidura took place before Shukadev Goswami spoke Srimad Bhagavatam. Yes? Chronologically. Because Shukadev Goswami is, this is, Krishna has just departed. Krishna literally has just departed. So Maitreya is speaking to Vidura just after Krishna departed. And Shukadev Goswami speaking Srimad Bhagavatam takes place during the reign of Maharaj Pariksit. So chronologically it happened first. But Maitreya has now heard directly from Krishna. He's going to say in these verses that he previously heard Srimad Bhagavatam, not from Shukadeva Goswami, because that didn't happen yet. Okay, you know, it's early in the morning, we're trying to get the chronology straight. Srimad Bhagavatam was existing before Shukadeva Goswami spoke it. We're going to hear that this morning. The special presentation of Srimad Bhagavatam by Shukadeva Goswami is because Shukadeva Goswami spoke it. He heard it from Vyas. Shukadeva Goswami heard Srimad Bhagavatam from Vyas. But when Shukadeva Goswami spoke Srimad Bhagavatam, even Vyas wanted to be in the audience hearing from Shukadeva Goswami, because it was spoken by Shukadev. Prabhupada explains that in those beginning verses of the Bhagavatam, because like a parrot, before eating the fruit makes the fruit juicy by pressing the fruit with his beak and then takes from the fruit. So Shukadeva Goswami, by his speaking Srimad Bhagavatam, that which is Nigama Kalpataram Galitam Palam Midam, that which is already juicy, like nectar, he made it even more juicy, more nectar, more nectarine, more sweet, more palatable, because he spoke it. Same subject, didn't change the subject, but his speaking it was so nice. But before Shukadeva Goswami spoke it, Vyas compiled it. But before Vyas compiled it, it was known. Maitreya is going to say a whole genealogy of hearing it. Because what is Bhagavatam? It's Bhagavat Purana. Bhagavata means in relation to Bhagavan. See it the other way. That which is in relation to Bhagavan is Bhagavata. And the Bhagavata Purana is histories describing Bhagavan. So histories describing Bhagavan were known before Vyas compiled Srimad Bhagavatam. It was present in a spoken form, and it was narrated, we're going to hear, through a whole lineage. But the speciality of Maitreya was not only he heard it previously, but he heard directly from Krishna speaking Uddhava Gita with all the requisite questions and answers. Please don't sit, the deities are right here, so just come to the side if you would. Thanks. So Maitreya, already previously qualified, having directly heard from Krishna, was given the service by Krishna to then speak what he heard to Vidura, who hadn't even come yet, and said, Vidura is going to come in a couple of days. Sure enough, he came in a couple of days, and Uddhava spoke with Vidura for some time. Beautiful, beautiful section of the Bhagavatam. And then the end of the day had come. Uddhava said, I have to go now. Excuse me, the end of the night had come. It was morning and he had to do the service that Krishna had given him. And he indicated where he might find Maitreya. So he went to, because Maitreya is elder to me. Maitreya is supposed to speak to you. Our Lord Krishna said, just before he left, he spoke about you, Vidura. And he said that you should hear from Maitreya, so go hear from Maitreya. So I went to hear from Maitreya. And the previous chapters, he wanted to hear Krishna Katha, but the subject matter that he wanted to hear about first was all kinds of things that are very difficult for us to hear, like the details of creation, the mind-breaking, you know, details of creation. But he wanted it. It's Vidura was learned. He, not that he didn't know. He wanted, you know, Cosmos 101. He already had that understanding. He wanted the realization that, you know, the way it's described in one of these sections, that is, everything was within the heart of Maitreya. Everything was within the heart of Maitreya. So when Vidura was asking questions, it wasn't just information, it was, he wanted the fullness of the subject, the realization of Maitreya, the depth that could, by hearing the sound vibration, can bring him to Krishna. So, details about creation are presented. The preliminary is called in Sanskrit sarga, the work of Lord Vishnu, what Vishnu did step by step, and it wasn't Big Bang, step by step what Vishnu did to bring about creation and the unfolding of the elements and the then presenting those before presenting Lord Brahma before those elements. So that's what this chapter is. And I'll just read some of the verses. The Rishi Maitreya said, and this is text 1 from chapter 6, we're around chapter 8. The Lord thus heard about the suspension of the progressive creative functions of the universe due to the non-combination of his potencies, such as Mahatattva. The powerful Lord then simultaneously entered into the 23 elements with the goddess Kali, his external energy, who alone amalgamates all the different elements. Thus, when the personality of God had entered into the elements with his energy, all the living entities were enlivened into different activities, just as one is engaged in his work after awakening from sleep. This is the glance of Vishnu. Anyway, so things are starting to stir. And it's time for Brahma to appear. At the end of chapter 7 is whole chapter just of questions. Long after hearing about these processes of creation, up to a certain point, Vidura jumps up and down and says, "Wow, what about this, and that, the other thing, please?" And Maitreya said, "Vidura, you're really special. You're a fitting representative of your dynasty. You're exclusively devoted to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And I'm very enlivened to answer all of your questions one by one. Let me now begin speaking on the Bhagavat Purana, which was directly spoken to the great sages, that's the four Kumaras, by the Personality of Godhead." So that's Lord Sankarshan. He's going to describe. "For the benefit of those who are entangled in extreme miseries," that's us, "for the sake of very little pleasure. Some time ago, being inquisitive to know, Sanat Kumar, the chief of the boy saints, accompanied by other great sages, inquired exactly like you about the truths regarding Vasudev, the Supreme, from Lord Sankarshan, who is seated at the bottom of the universe." This is the way of disciplic succession. Some question. Wonderful question. Wonderful questioner. The same subject was spoken about some time ago, doesn't say how long ago. And then with reference to that authoritative discussion, Lord Sankarshan to Sanat Kumar, here's the same question and the answer from Lord Sankarshan. "At that time, Lord Sankarshan was meditating upon his Supreme Lord." The Lord Sankarshan is an expansion of Baladev, and he has his master. He considers he's the servant of his master. As we hear about Balaram, he's the source of the mood of service for all. And Lord Sankarshan, his expansion, was meditating on his Lord, Vasudev. whom the learned esteem as Lord Vasudeva. But for the sake of the advancement of the great learned sages, he was in meditation. He slightly opened his lotus-like eyes and began to speak. The sages came from the highest planets down to the lower regions through the water of the Ganges, and therefore the hair on their heads was wet. Wasn't it an imaginary ride through the Ganges? They touched the lotus feet of the Lord. Anantashesh, Lord Sankarshan, has lotus feet. Did you know that? Which are worshipped with various paraphernalia by the daughters of the serpent king. When they desire good husbands, it doesn't say anything about the serpent king. Then the four Kumaras, headed by Sanat Kumar, who all knew the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. They already knew, but now they're hearing. Glorified the Lord in rhythmic accents with selected words full of affection and love. They were expert reciters, and they got enlivened from what they were hearing. So, like, they had a spontaneous sankirtan. They just started singing, and it doesn't say they were dancing. At that time, Lord Sankarshan, with his thousands of raised hoods, began to radiate in effulgence from the glowing stones on his head. He became enlivened too. So now it's text 7. Lord Sankarshan thus spoke the purport of Srimad Bhagavatam to the great sage Sanat Kumar, who had already taken the vow of renunciation. Sanat Kumar also, in his turn, when inquired of by Sankhyayana Muni, explained Srimad Bhagavatam as he heard it from Sankarsana. Doesn't give any detail about Sankhyayana Muni, but it says in the next verse, the great sage Sankhyayana was the chief amongst the transcendentalists. And when he was describing the glories of the Lord in terms of Srimad Bhagavatam, it so happened that my spiritual master, Parashara, and Brahaspati both heard him. So, Parashara, we're going to hear more about Parashara Muni. He's stated by Maitreya as the spiritual master of Maitreya. Text 9. The great sage Parashara, as aforementioned, being so advised by the great sage Pulastya, spoke unto me, the foremost of the Puranas, Bhagavatam. I shall also describe this before you, my dear son, in terms of my hearing, because you are always my faithful follower. Purport. The great sage of the name Pulastya is the father of all demoniac descendants. How did that happen? It was a service. Once upon a time, Parashara began a sacrifice in which all the demons were to be burnt to death, because his father had been killed and devoured by one of them. The great sage Vasishtha arrived at the sacrifice and requested Parashara to stop the deadly action. And because of Vasishtha's position and respect in the community of sages, Parashara could not deny the request. Parashara, having stopped the sacrifice, Palashya, the father of the demons, appreciated his brahminical temperament and gave the blessing that, in the future, he would be a great speaker of the Vedic literatures called the Puranas, the supplements of the Vedas. Parashara's action was appreciated by Palashya because Parashara had forgiven the demons out of his brahminical power of forgiveness. Parashara was able to demolish all the demons in the sacrifice, but he considered, quote, "Demons are so made that they devour living creatures, men and animals. But why, on that account, should I withdraw my brahminical qualification of forgiveness?" As the great speaker of the Puranas, Parashara, first of all, spoke on Srimad Bhagavata Purana, because it is the foremost of all the Puranas. Maitreya desired to narrate the same Bhagavatam he had heard from Parashara, and Vidura was qualified to hear it because of his faithfulness and his following the instructions received from superiors. Two qualifications. So, Srimad Bhagavatam was being narrated from time immemorial by disciplic succession, even before the time of Vyasadeva. And here comes the so-called historians calculate the Puranas to be only a few hundred years old, but factually the Puranas existed from time immemorial, before all historical calculations by the mundaners and speculative philosophers. Prabhupada doesn't give an ounce of credit to the modern speculators. So because of the subject, we'll do a little genealogy. In Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10, think of the first verses of chapter 10 where Krishna says, nobody knows me. Nobody understands who I am. And he speaks of the seven sages, and before them the four great sages, and from them all the progenitors of mankind and all descendants following them. Nobody knows. So, the four great sages, the four Kumaras, the seven great sages, the four Kumaras are direct sons of Brahma. The seven great sages are also direct sons of Brahma. Following, so the four Kumaras, Lord Shiva, Swayambhuva Manu and Shatarupa, and the seven sages, direct sons of Brahma. Well, Shatarupa, the wife of Swayambhuva Manu, direct from Lord Brahma. So those seven, Vishishta, mentioned here, he's one. Vishishta, then his son Shakti Maharshi, his son Parashara Muni, his son Vyasadeva. So, Vishishta is the grandfather of Parashara. Vishishta, again, one of the seven great sages. The seven great sages include Angira. Where do we find Angira Rishi or Angira Muni? He visited the palace of King Chitraketu. It's one of the original seven great sages. And he's particularly known for astronomy, science of astronomy, that gift, very complicated, vast body of knowledge. Atri Muni is another. Atri Muni is famous in a number of ways. His wife is very famous, Anasuya. He was the father of Dattatreya. Atri Muni, Angira Muni, Vashishta, Kratu Muni, very expert in the sacrificial performances mentioned within the Vedas. Palastya Muni. Palastya Muni is mentioned in this purport. Palastya Muni appears in the story of Govardhan Hill also, carrying Govardhan Hill to where it is now, Palastya Muni. And he resided in the southern part of India. So, Vashishta is one of them. And Vashishta and his wife Arundhati had one son, Shakti Maharshi. Shakti Maharshi was married, obviously, because he had a son. His wife's name is Adrishyati, and it's described specifically in Canto 1, chapter, early, one of those early sections, chapter 13, I think. Anyway, early section. The detail of Parashara Muni's life is described, and her name is presented there, Adrishyati, that she was bearing the child Parashara when she was just 12 years old. And after Parashara was born, one fine day, his father, Shakti Maharshi, was on a journey somewhere. And in the course of his being on a journey, he was in the forest, and one Rakshasa personality came and devoured him. And the Rakshasa previously had been a king, but due to some devious behavior, Vishvamitra Muni cursed the king to become a Rakshasa. And then the Rakshasa devoured the grandfather of Parashara Muni, and the father of Parashara Muni. So Parashara Muni got in a get-back mentality. So his get-back mentality was, first he was planning to destroy the entire creation. And he got talked out of that one. So instead he decided to destroy by a Vedic sacrifice all the Rakshasas, all the demons. And he began the Yajna, and his father, grandfather, because his father was gone, his grandfather, Vashishta, came and spoke to him. Very interesting dialogue or instruction. Something that some of you have heard somewhere along the way, I'm sure, in the course of your life. And that is accepting destiny. Was a lecture about accepting destiny. Your father was receiving the result of something from his past, and the instrument for his receiving something from his past was the Rakshasa that devoured him. Accept the destiny of others from your brahminical position and exercise forgiveness. Why should you become a victim of the flow of events of destiny and become the opponent of the flow of events of destiny and blame the instruments of the flow of events of destiny? It's something like what Prabhupada said to Peter Burwash. Those of you that have been to the Festival of Inspiration, you've heard this one, because he says it almost every time. And he's the keynote speaker every time. Some long time ago. The detail is less important than the punchline. But sometime long ago, he was a successful tennis coach. He still has a tennis coach business, but he does other things. So he was earning at a time when ISKCON didn't have people who were earning. We didn't have a congregation taking part. It was pretty unusual, very special. And he was living in Hawaii, and he gave to the temple president in Hawaii a donation. I forget what, $500 or something like that, which at that time was a lot. And then shortly after, that person, I don't remember if it was a temple president, somebody ran away with the money. So next time Prabhupada was in Hawaii, Peter Burwash came to Prabhupada and said, "This happened." And Prabhupada immediately responded by saying, "Don't blame the instrument of your own karma." I mean, that's not an expected thing to hear. Right? Someone stole $500. Don't blame the instrument of your karma. But that was Prabhupada. It was a lesson that stayed with him his whole life. And it's not an easy lesson to learn because we like to think differently. Prabhupada didn't say, "Oh, it's okay. Don't worry about it. It's only $500." Prabhupada was very upset with the arrangement. Prabhupada was a transcendentalist, and he took opportunities to train devotees in lessons that would be meaningful for them for the rest of their life. It's a little side note, but it's not totally dissimilar. The long build-up of Prabhupada's explaining to Bhakti Tirtha Swami, or responding to Bhakti Tirtha Swami about racial discrimination within ISKCON, because Bhakti Tirtha Swami was black. And at a time when it was, the civil rights movement was raging. In fact, it's because of the civil rights movement that, although he grew up in a ghetto, part of his life story is he had to carry a gun, just because if he didn't carry a gun, you just had to show, like, you're macho, and so don't mess with me. So he carried a gun when he was a kid. But he was a brilliant scholar, and he got a full scholarship from Princeton University, because it was a time when people that didn't have money from the black community, it was politically correct to give scholarships to them. It was a new thing. So he became a full scholarship Princeton University student. And in the course of being in Princeton University, being a black person in a white supremacist, place, it wasn't easy. But he became the valedictorian of his class and the president of his class in his senior year. He was a leader. And he was on his way to a brilliant career. But somewhere along the way, from the Brooklyn Temple, we had sent a Sankirtan party to colleges, and it was Sudhanu, god brother, who his party gave a book to Bhakti Tirtha Swami, and he wanted to meet Prabhupada. And he met Prabhupada, and he gave up that brilliant career that he would have been sailing in stardom and fame in the Afro-American community. He would have been flying high. He let go of that to associate with Prabhupada and serve Prabhupada in his Hare Krishna movement. That was the time that we lived. And as he started association with devotees, he found that there was racial discrimination amongst devotees. We sometimes find, I expect devotees are, because our teaching is here, and sometimes behavior isn't up here, it's down here. And it was, he's very sensitive. Racial discrimination in a spiritual movement. So he had the opportunity to ask Prabhupada, it's a much bigger build-up. The build-up helps get the punchline, but here he is, his heart pounding, thinking, I now have an opportunity to speak to my spiritual master about this, because it represents the whole flow of his coming out of the ghetto and into stardom practically. And here in your organization, there is the same thing that's outside of your organization. And he just presented it to Prabhupada. Like, you know, unfortunately in your organization, in this ISKCON, there's racial discrimination. And, he was expecting sympathy, and what he got was instruction. He said, if you become troubled by their racial discrimination, you're no better than they are. You're on the same platform of bodily consciousness. So don't be on the same platform of bodily consciousness. Rise above the platform of bodily consciousness. There's bodily consciousness and bodily consciousness and bodily consciousness. Rise above bodily consciousness. Don't stay in bodily consciousness. Or you know better than they are. Whoa. And so, like the qualification of Vidura that's mentioned here, Vidura's qualification, because he was faithful and he followed the instructions received from superiors. That's a really nice measure of faithfulness. When you hear, you follow. Follow the instructions received from superiors, because the instructions are the opportunity to get out of the mire of material existence. The classic example is someone has fallen into the bottom of a well and they can't get themselves out of the well, however expert, clever, or whatever, how well they can swim or how high they can jump, or you can't get out of the well. But if someone that's out of the well lowers a rope down into the well, then you can get out of the well. So the instructions of superiors, as mentioned here, qualified persons, that's the means of getting out. And one has to adhere, hold on to the instructions received, live by the instructions received, then you can get out of material existence, and otherwise you can't. You can't get out of the well. The qualification of Vidura, recognized by Maitreya, was you have that qualification. So I'm just like the Kumaras were hearing from Lord Sankarshan, they were chanting and singing in the most educated, erudite, refined way, and Lord Sankarshan was so happy that jewels on his head were glowing, and that the reciprocation was just fantastic. And Sankhyayana Muni taught the same to Parashara Muni and Brihaspati. And advised by Palashya, Parashara spoke it to Maitreya. So, mentioned here is, just go through the little history, this is Purana time, once upon a time. So, when Parashara stopped, let's see what it says here. Vashishta arrived at the sacrifice and requested Parashara to stop the deadly action. The sacrifice meant for destroying the demons. And because of Vashishta's position and respect, plus what he said was true, don't become, if we get involved in the get back mentality, we just got sucked into the whole material vortex. Said, how do you not? How do you stay detached and the answer is attachment to transcendence can keep one detached from this, the swirl of the material energy. And it's moving fast. And it's very powerful, and it's all around us, and it's what everyone is doing, and it's real easy. Like at Northeastern University, I spoke on September 11th, just a few days ago. So the topic was September 11th, a spiritual perspective. And at the end, one of the questions at the end was, all of what you've described sounds right. The problem is, it's real easy to just go along with, you know, the action, reaction, and being implicated, becoming angry at the behavior of others. It's real easy. It's just like natural. It's just conditioning. It's not natural for the soul. It's natural according to the impulses born of the modes of material nature. But what's the option? Or is there an option? Is there some alternative besides the push and pull of the flow of events of material existence, and you just choose between this one and that one, and that's all there is? The situation of specifically here is you want to play drum? Why don't you go back there? If you want to sit and hear the class, put your drum down. Thanks. It's distracting. The topic here is anger. And maybe some of us are more angry and some of us less angry, but sometimes it arises. So how do you deal with it? If it's not anger, then something else. What's the option? Specifically, it's the plea from Vashishtha was the brahminical qualification of forgiveness. It's a quality. Because from qualities flows behavior. Say it again. From quality, it's like Brahma karma swabhavajam, kshatriya karma swabhavajam, vaishya karma swabhavajam, vaishya karma swabhavajam. Swabhava is one's nature. And from nature comes activity. So one of the training of any type of education, children's education, adult education, devotee training and education, it's character. Because from character comes behavior. And how do you train character? You can train a behavior. Those of you that are parents, it's one thing to train a behavior. It's another thing, character. Because character then monitors the behavior, even when the parent isn't there. The right behavior is going to be there because the character is there. And that's what's going to happen. At some point, the child grows up and the parents aren't there. And what's going to guide the child? It's character. How do you train character? And the answer is through association of one who has character. Otherwise, it's not going to happen. And that's what Prabhupada speaks about the degradation of society today. They're not proper leaders. They're setting the wrong, they don't know, but they're leaders. So they're false leaders. And people aren't happy with that, so they want another leader and another leader, and that's the whole program. Anyway, so the qualified association with a person that has genuine qualities. That's the method. And then there's the prerequisites, like with Vidura, faith and following. And Maitreya, that he has received from those that he received from. He received from Parashara. And Parashara received from his grandfather, Vashishtha. Stay with character. Don't yield to the pushings of the modes of nature, like anger. How do you take anger from the heart? By character. The character, the brahminical character of forgiveness. It's the argument, or that the logic of Vasishtha was, like Prabhupada's to Peter Burwash, don't become angry at the instrument of your karma. You can become angry at the impurity that's within your heart that brings this misfortune. Whatever it is that's back there that caused this misfortune, feel regret for that. And instead of just becoming reactive to the next thing that comes your way, choose differently. Choose according to the instructions that you receive from persons with character. And that's a choice you can make. Like the verse from Nectar of Instruction, Vacho Vegam, Manasa Krodha Vegam. One can, they're vegams, they're urges, pushing. And you're being pushed. We are being pushed. This nice little section, I'm going to put that on hold and come back again in a moment, but very fascinating description by Narada to King Pachinibari about how it works. There was a body that we once had, previous life body, and we did things with our senses, working senses, knowledge acquiring senses, and some impressions were formed from within the mind. That body became old, useless, given up. Subtle body carries the soul into the womb of the next mother, and then here's another body. So in this other body, there are these impressions that time is in one condition storing, in another condition activating. There's a time for all things. It's discussed in the third canto of Bhagavatam. Anyway, again, Vidura is speaking to Maitreya and asking about how does time work in events of life, in creation of Brahma, or in what we do every day. How does time work? So, tick, 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 tick. Something that's stored, it's still stored, and now it's time. And it comes. Something out here helps to trigger that, but it's not the thing out here, it's the time energy, and it's just it's a stored desire that's a consequence of our past activity. The activity makes an impression and it's stored. And it's called the desire. It's a, you contemplate, you develop a desire in relation to that something. It's a function of the mind. And if the mind, so you just, if you go with the flow, like this person at Northeastern said, it's just real easy. Just like things happen and you just react. It's real easy. It's real easy. It just happens naturally. But there, so how it happens naturally, it's just something in the past stored. Time, energy brings that to the state of consciousness instead of stored in the form of a desire. The example Prabhupada gives in the purport, supposing it's a desire for something that's frustrated and so there's anger, and there's anger within the mind. And the anger connected with the sense of tongue becomes harsh speech. Anger in the mind connected with the hand becomes a fist. You don't even have to think about it. It just happens. The muscles clench. If it's connected to the leg, there's kicking. And in the face, it's, you know. But that is just connected to that, which is connected to that. And it's, you know, we're just being carried by the machine. And is there an alternative? If you have Vasishtha for a grandfather, it is. He'll come and tell you. And because of the respect, oh, how important is respect? Because of the respect, that Parashara had for Vasishtha, his grandfather, he not only stopped the behavior, but he regained his proper quality through that association. And it was so much appreciated by Palashya Muni, because he had this service, the details is something else, but he had the service of creating demons. So when the demons were not all destroyed, he very much appreciated. Just see, look at this Parashara. He was provoked. He started losing it. Just the words of Vasishtha, he stopped. Not only behavior, but he regained his proper quality. So he gave him benediction. You will be a great speaker. He's the grandson. He's like, you know, a little guy. Little kid. And you'll be a great speaker of the Vedas, specifically the Puranas. And Parashara, this is another example of, like Prahlad Maharaj, while Parashara was still within the womb of his mother, that's when he initially learned the Vedas. Like Prahlad. So it's not a one-time deal. Parashara became realized within the womb of his mother, just by hearing from his father, Shakti Maharshi, on the Vedas, which he heard and understood from Vasishtha. And then later, Parashara, because of this nice quality, he was given the opportunity to hear from Sankhyayana Muni, who heard from the Sanat Kumar, who heard directly from Lord Sankarshan. So we have an opportunity to hear two. And then, like, you know, it doesn't mention all the other people that were assembled there. It mentions the ones who heard with faith and carried out the instructions. Because such persons then become qualified. And then they, in turn, being qualified, can speak the message to others. That's what we're supposed to be doing. At least, you know, the opportunity is being given to us, say it that way. Because there's somebody up there at the top of the well saying, grab the rope. Here it is. Grab hold. Yeah, but, you know, I still have some plants to enjoy. Please grab the rope. Well, a little later I'll grab the rope. I'm working towards it. Anyway, the opportunity is also ours, without a doubt. And another important for Prabhupada, as the translator of the Bhagavatam, and dealing with the audience that he was dealing with, the Western English-speaking parts of the world. And frankly, it's just as difficult with the non-English, the people of India that, yes, I know all about Krishna already. The challenge of persons that are influenced by speculation, in particular Western scholarship that says the Puranas are a few hundred years old. And there's a whole intellectual scholarly rationale to say why that is so. Largely, it's the Sanskrit is different. And Jiva Goswami deals with why the Sanskrit is different. Sanskrit is different to make it more accessible for persons that may not have the capacity, because it's Kali Yuga, the Alaukika Sanskrit, the heavenly, the divine Sanskrit. It's simple, Laukika Sanskrit. Even we can chant it and without studying all the rules of grammar have some idea and so forth. Prabhupada didn't put much emphasis. Some persons can study Sanskrit, but it's not something that the general devotee population needs to feel the importance of studying Sanskrit. Just hearing it is sufficient, and hearing it and hearing it, and then the understanding comes. Just with, because the Bhagavat Purana specifically, it's in relation to Bhagavan, it purifies just by hearing it. Okay, I'll end there. See if there's any discussion. Questions? Yes.
Maharaj, you were talking about anger and you were talking about how forgiveness is an antidote for anger. So I was trying to understand in the case of the anger of the child towards the parents, forgiveness doesn't seem the right thing because the child is much... is not in a position really like that to forgive. So how does it work over there? The child is holding some anger.
Well, it may depend on the circumstance that maybe forgiveness is appropriate. In the circumstance, it may not be appropriate. Meaning, that it's just, I want, and the parent says, it's not good for you, the answer is no, and so now I'm feeling anger. You obstructed the thing I want. So I'm feeling anger. So then it's not appropriate. Then, so many other things can be done. But a good starting point is the lesson, you know, depending upon the age of the child and the circumstance, the anger is very destructive. Vashishta says that to Parashar also. Anger is very destructive. It's not only destructive to others, it's destructive to yourself. It destroys your good qualities. Now, however you communicate that to a child. So what is it that you're feeling angry about? I want to do what I want to do, and you're saying no. Okay, let's take a look at that. And different ways that you can try to help a child understand why no is appropriate in some occasions. Or give examples or help them to understand why no is appropriate. Parenthood.
Can I just add a little bit, Maharaj? I was more talking about not so much the child as in a young child, but you know, the child in us is adults that post anger against their parents for different reasons. May not be so much as, you know, don't do this or don't do that, but some sort of things that we have had as a child, and we still unknowingly don't get anger.
Well, that's then forgiveness is appropriate. Why not?
But then,
that's all right. That's all right. That's all right. I'm letting go of my anger towards those who are my superiors. If there was in fact a transgression or something of that, you know, that genre, and I'm holding on to it, how do I get rid of it? Where do you put it? Forgiveness. It's appropriate. Hey, Mangi, you have something, and then Ananda Vrindavan.
I have an appreciation.
Huh?
Appreciation and a clarification.
You sick?
Yes.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear. Your son is sniffling. I just asked him if he's sick.
It's just his allergy.
Okay, allergy. Okay.
The appreciation. Parashara was like he was getting carried away with his anger, and then Vasishtha came and said, you know, and he pulls back and then he reinstates himself and his quality of being a Brahmana, and then he gets the blessing from him that he can he gets qualified to speak a Prakrutam. And I was appreciating how when it's very easy in one sense, like when we're getting carried away with the modes, if we can reinstate ourselves in the instruction that we receive and automatically the blessings come, we will be able to transcend that which is blocking the progress. And I was appreciating that point.
Okay.
And for the clarification of the analogy you gave about the well.
About the which?
The well.
Okay.
So the you said the rope is like the instruction. So what we are holding on, what makes us hold on to that rope is the faith, right?
Well, there's a little motivation that we don't like being in the well. Yeah, both. We recognize, I may not be so clear what it's like out of the well, but I don't want to be here. And there's an opportunity. So I trust the person, I trust the rope. I'll hold on.
So how can we, each one of us is, as far as faith is concerned, we are in a different trajectory. It's like, so, especially I'm thinking about when you're in a position of giving care to somebody younger than you, how can you encourage them to nurture that faith to go beyond where they, because the tendency, I don't still have that faith, or I can't do it. How to nurture and kind of empower them to make them understand that it's there in them.
The best is be a good example. And be a consistent, good example. But the choice is still the other person's choice. Be a good example. And then under that banner or heading comes so many things. Be consistent in your own example. Be patient. Don't lose your patience. It's easy to lose patience. Don't lose your patience. Doesn't mean don't lose your patience. Doesn't mean you're forever a doormat, but don't lose your patience. Try from your side to see the soul, not just the behaviors, and see the soul and compassion for the soul, and sound, be a good example, give spiritual sound vibration, and like Krishna, leave the decision to the other person, Krishna and Arjuna. It's not just like, okay, it's your destiny, whatever you want to do with it, but it's your decision. In each, to give an answer to your question, each case, as you know from experience, is a little different, or really different, and so it's more principle-based than, do this, try that. You give somebody the do this, try that things. If someone is really stuck, a few persons who that individual trusts and understand the same thing, say the same thing, that may help them get unstuck. But still the individual has to make some choices and allow for that. kind of Vrindavan?
Kind of similar lines, Maharaj, in fact, you answered the question. I was on the point about following instructions with faith.
Turn the volume up because there are people in the back that can't hear. Don't have to say it again. Following instructions.
Following instructions with faith. So I was thinking about this whole culture of asking questions.
Yeah.
Like the whole transcendental knowledge seems to be in response to the question by the seeker. And so I was thinking in my own life that I have to, you know, to get personal instructions, especially for personal challenges, I have to put in thought and ask questions from my superiors. And so on the same note, like what you were just describing, the attitude of respecting the other person. So in cases where there are dependents and say the questions don't come and we are seeing and the question is not asked, so is it okay to just
there's different things to do at different times. One of the things is let it go. Another thing is to ask some questions of them. Do you have any thoughts about this? What are your thoughts about that? It's a relationship, so it's not... You're not disrespecting by acting in the relationship. Just the disrespect would be forcing. So it's not forcing. I hear parents use this language too often. You know, I made my child do something. I made them chant. Or, you know, whatever the thing is, I made them something. But in the relationship, there's interactions.
So like even in adult-to-adult relationships,
sure.
It's okay to...
Sure, you do it with your husband all the time. And it's perfectly okay. And then, you know, outside of the family, it's perfectly okay. Just maintain the respect, and you're not forcing. You have a relationship. Perfectly okay. Yes.
Krishna Maharaj, thank you very much for this lecture. It has been very enlightening. I have a very basic question because there are a lot of devotees who have been practicing it and trying to be a devotee and not there yet. My very basic question is, Krishna has entered everything
during
creation.
Yeah. So I read the verse where he says it.
So, what is evil? Is it the palpitation of a nightmare kind of a thing? Something, because we are still in the body consciousness, we see it? Or is there an evil if he's there everywhere and Krishna is all good and auspicious and
Free will is the culprit. Misuse of free will is the culprit. This could be a short discussion or a long discussion. The longer one would go in the direction of as far as good and evil, that's illusion. Illusion meaning the reflection of reality. The real evil is the primordial misuse of free will turning away from Krishna. So whatever, having turned away from Krishna, to say this is good and that's evil, or good and bad, it's a reflection of reality. It's not reality. It's neither good nor bad. It's all bad. Transcendentally bad or absolutely bad. Even the good. Provided it's in ignorance of the original mistake that brings us to the material world to begin with, the misuse of free will.
So is Krishna in ignorance as well?
Krishna is what?
Is he also in ignorance? Is that why?
No, he's granted by his kindness. He's granted free will. It's not even like once upon a time there wasn't free will, and then Krishna became kind and said, "Okay, here's some free will." We're part and parcel of the Supreme. In that sense, Krishna is within everything. We're within Krishna. We're part and parcel of Krishna. there's free will. Evil is something from our side, that which Krishna has given us, free will. We can properly use it, misuse it. When we misuse it, as you, the language that you used, yes, it's a dream. Everything that flows from that misuse of free will is a dream. Daydream, night dream is a dream. Now you see it, now you don't. Now it's real, then you wake up, oh, it didn't happen. There was no tiger chasing me in my dream. There was no, whatever that nightmare was, it just didn't exist. Didn't exist, although it felt real. And I'm still like, you know, trembling from that nightmare, etc. The 9/11 discussion from the other day. In the course of that presentation, three people cried from something that happened so many years ago. Because I was 11 and it just started crying. And I was 14 and my whole world was shattered. My, you know, sense of safety. And a Chinese girl that wasn't even, you know, she said, you know, I live with this constant fear. Or she said pressure. And I said, what do you mean pressure? See, this fear of feeling unsafe. Because that's what others were saying. So she also shared it. She's not just World Trade Towers, but not feeling safe. So, now back to the basis of your question is Krishna is within everything. Is he within that fear or that act of violence or something that's bad, something that's... Krishna is within our heart and because we're his part and parcel, he gives us free will. Sarvasya chaham riddhi sannivishto. He's situated within the heart. And Krishna gives us the opportunity to remember him or to forget him. And in that forgetfulness of him is the primordial forgetfulness of him. That's an ill act. Or the root of evil. The root of ignorance. The primordial ignorance, ignoring Krishna. And from that, it's illusory. All of what flows is another one of Krishna's energies, his illusory energy. And it looks like this, or it looks like that. We'll go back to that person that stole the $500 that Peter Burwash gave. There's an externalization of something that's within oneself. Some impression and something. So I'm the architect of that misfortune, and it comes through some instrument. But what's the architecture beginning? Misuse of our free will. Or say it the opposite. If there is a desire to eradicate evil, Krishna is there. Are we ready to take it? And if the answer is no, then it continues. But it's the misuse of free will, and Krishna's sanctioning. It's not he wants it, he's sanctioning. And giving us prompts and reminders saying, don't do that. Don't do that. And then I may feel angry towards God. Look, he just went like that.
He's
in the heart. Yes, to clarify, he's in the heart of the living entity who misuses his free will, which was that the capacity for which was granted by Krishna. And Krishna doesn't take it away. Krishna doesn't. He, as his, our dearmost friend, he advises us how to properly use our free will, but he doesn't force us. He doesn't force us to accept his advice. If we say no, there's some children I know that's their favorite word. And if they say no, then he doesn't interfere. there are consequences, and that's also Krishna is there within those consequences. But then the exercise of the free will, that's us. The freedom to do that, the capacity to do that, is Krishna. And there's a relationship. So it's not, although Krishna is within everything, there's still individuality. And a relationship within that individuality. I can say yes or no. And saying no, that's my choice. The capacity for that is from Krishna. The sanction for that is from Krishna. But it's my choice. That's my responsibility. Krishna is advising us, don't do that. Okay, I'm going to end. Oh, one last question.
I have two questions. One is technical, one is practical.
Go quickly.
Okay.
I want to end.
Forgiveness, you know, here we are glorifying Parashramani because he came, he reinstated his forgiveness quality. But in outside circle and family circle where there are not devotees, forgiveness is sometimes considered as cowardly act.
Let people think it's cowardly, think it's cowardly. We don't abandon virtue because people think otherwise.
So it is okay to, our side we have to
please Guru and Krishna, that's your mission. And other people can process. You can factor it in how you might express yourself, but you don't deviate from what you know is pleasing to Guru and Krishna.
Second, it's a technical question. You said Vyasadeva was there hearing Shukadeva Goswami because Shukadeva Goswami is a very nice speaker and he wanted to
Very nice speaker.
So I just wanted to clarify what is nice. Is it because he was very nice, very proliferant in speaking, or is it his realizations?
Yes. Latter. There's details, but I don't need to go there. His spiritual position before being Shukadev Goswami, there is one Purana that describes, and I haven't heard Prabhupada say, that's why I'm hesitating, but there's one Purana that describes, and sometimes devotees like to speak about, he was parrot of Srimati Radharani. Yeah, so, but whoever he was before, it's his realization, it's his mood. Vyasadeva had perfectly understood it also. Maitreya had perfectly understood it also. But it's Shukadeva Goswami who had that unique qualification, which Vyasadeva recognized. The four Kumaras, who already knew, they heard from Lord Sankarshan. Oh, like that. Hearing from someone, even one may already know, because the great qualification of the speaker.
Thank you.
Yeah.